We're doing Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon. We're holding the fourth chapter, the 14th paragraph, page Nun Zayin in these editions. Rif'ut amidot eina besamim gashmiim. The cure of one's traits, one's attributes, cannot be attained through regular medicine, physical medicine. U'cheshem she'acholi eino no guf. Just as the illness is not physical, so to its cure is not a physical cure. The illness is in one's sense, in one's soul. And so the cure is also where we want to affect the way a person senses, the way a person feels, the way a person's soul reacts. Sefer Amidot Shehechino Chacham Bechochmato, the book of traits that the wise man prepares in his wisdom, Hakriya b'sifro marpeh lanafesh, reading such a book cures the soul, v'atmada biyunot tikun amidot. And as one is consistent in analyzing, understanding, learning such a work, so then one develops and fixes one's traits. Ve'omnam en hakriya b'sifrei ha'musar refuah vadait. But reading such works is not a certain cure. Kmo she'en refuah betuchah lecholei hagufim. Just as when we take medication, we have no guarantee that a physical ailment will pass. Ve'akol lefi chozek ha'machala ve'kilkul haguf. We know it depends on how ill a person is and how much his body is run down. Ken choli anefashot, the same is true with regard to one's soul, umruot hamidot, and how embittered one's traits have become, en toaltam vadait, you can't be certain to cure them, ki gam ken goralam shel haretiot bechozek hamachala talui, because also the question of whether the balms will work, the spiritual embalmment, the spiritual cure, whether it will work, well, that depends on how ill, so to speak, a person is. ואומנם החול יענו שהוא השפלות, המידה השפלה אין לה מזור בקריאת דברי מוסר. A person, he says, has to know, we discussed this last night, that there is the most basic element, and that is self-worth. And when a person feels that he is worthless, so then you cannot cure him by giving him works of Musar. Works of rebuke are not going to cure a person who is so down on themselves that they don't have self-worth. Number one, before you can deal, a person must have self-worth. Now, I want to take a minute to discuss this, because Be'ezrat Hashem, we're all going to be parents. And there's a basic mistake that parents sometimes make. Before we can make demands of a child, the child has to have self-worth. If he has self-worth, then you can demand of him. If he realizes he's good, then you can demand of him to become better. But if he doesn't have that basic understanding, I am worthwhile, I am good, then he has a hard time becoming better. One of the most, maybe the most important thing we can give children is that feeling, I am good, I am worthwhile, I am worthy. From there they can grow. And then comes the challenge, how do I develop healthy self-worth? How do I ensure it doesn't become pride? Pride is fallacious. I'm taking credit for that which I am not. Pride is, look at me, because I did X, I deserve Y, Z, etc. If I say, because I did X, I deserve the recognition for having done X, that's healthy self-worth, it's true. If I say, because I did X, I deserve so much more, everyone should honor me, everyone should respect me, that I am, etc. That's when we're entering the realm of pride. Parents will sometimes overlook a child's weaknesses. That's okay, so long as we are developing true self-worth. What parents sometimes do is they develop a false image for the child. The child gets a 60 on a test and they say the teacher is worthless. The school doesn't know what they're doing. The child doesn't make friends and they tell him in this neighborhood the kids aren't social. And then what the parents are doing is they're covering up for the child's weakness, and instead of letting him recognize his true self-worth, they're developing a false self-worth. And that is a mistake. And that is something that self-destructs. We don't have to point out to a child what's wrong with him. Sometimes we should overlook it. We don't have to point out a child's weaknesses. Sometimes we have to overlook them. There are plenty of things you have to overlook in life. Sometimes you can help a person grow when you overlook it. you overlook it. You can develop other things, and slowly by developing other things, you can help him overcome his weaknesses. It's not always our job to deal with his weaknesses. But we have to be careful not to develop false pride, because that will self-destruct. At the core, the child knows it's not true. At the core, the child knows you're giving me credit for something I'm not, and then the child doesn't have the basic self-confidence they should have. Because the teacher said I deserved a 60, and my parents said I deserve 100. What am I worth? How come the other kids in class got 100? If the teacher's so stupid, then why am I the only one that failed? I'm a genius. The teacher's stupid. Now, this is an ongoing problem today, where parents fight for their kids instead of helping their kids develop true self-worth. Again, the most basic thing a child needs is self-worth. But the self-worth has to be true. And that sometimes means tough love. I have a very good friend who's missing an arm. And he is so talented that he can do with one hand what I can't do with two hands. He types quicker than me. He does computers better than me. He fixes electronics that I wouldn't know how to fix. How do you fix electronics with one hand? The hand you hold the screw with, what holds the instrument you're fixing? How do you play music with one hand? And the guy plays music, composes songs, is fantastic at computers. And I once asked his mother, how'd you do it? And she said, I had to bite my tongue when he decided he's going to ride a bike and his brothers told him you could ride like everyone else. And how do you balance with one hand? And I saw him fall and get hurt again and again. And I had to tell myself, don't get involved. Don't get involved. And as a mother, I'd stand by the window crying he shouldn't see me, holding myself back because I knew that this was the way he would develop truly. And this is a guy who Bo Hashem developed. Our role as parents is sometimes to let the child fall and get back up. And then they'll learn real success. And sometimes they just have to deal. And when you show them they have to deal, you tell them, I believe in you. My son asked me a few days ago, he said, I want to do something which I'm not sure if the school allows. It's off school grounds. And I'll tell you what he wanted to do. He wanted to sell candy. And he said, it could be the school policy is that even off school grounds, I'm not allowed to sell candy. So I said to him, I got the school rule book when we signed you in. It didn't say such a thing. So as far as I'm concerned, there's no rule against it. No one told me there's such a rule. But you have to know that if you're going to get in trouble in school for having sold off school grounds, don't say my father gave me permission. You want to take the risk, you're risking. You're risking, I'll give you the first money to buy the candy. Afterwards, if it's profitable, you keep buying. But it's your baby. And if the school gives you over the head, and if they give you detention, and if they take your money and they take your candies, your risk. You want to do it? It's all yours. Don't bring me into it. You want, and he's making good money. I mean, the kid's making, I don't know, 50, 80 shekel a week now. Okay, I don't know what'll happen when he gets caught. I recommend he doesn't walk around with all the money in his wallet. I don't know what'll happen. But he knows that it's his baby. From my perspective, no one told me it's forbidden in the school. I don't know of it being forbidden. He's not sure. He doesn't have to find out. But he knows he might find out the hard way. And he knows he might pay the price. That's his choice. I'm not going to throw him to the dogs. He said to me, if they tell me the only way I could get my candy back is if you come down to school, will you come down? I said, yeah, that I'll do. But I'm not going to take the blame. You're not going to tell them my father said I could. No, you want to do it, you deal. And he's happy he's dealing, but he also knows I've given him that trust now. Now, he might get in trouble, he might not. That's his baby. It's his responsibility. It's his risk. So far, he's very happy making his money. Fine. I said to him, you should know that it could be that if the school comes back and says you weren't allowed to do it, and then they call me down, and then they explain to me, hey, we don't allow this because A, B, and C. I might agree with them. I don't know why they would forbid it. You're doing it off school grounds, on your time. What's it their business? But they might tell me that they know that it causes kids to steal from their parents, to bring money that they're not entitled to, that it causes competition in school, causes kids to eat foods they're allergic to. They could tell me a lot of things. I don't buy it. I think that there's a store two buildings down from the school where kids could buy it anyway, so I'm not getting involved. But they might tell me, they might convince me, and then I might be on their side. Right now, I don't see a reason you shouldn't do it. Go ahead. Good luck. Okay, so he's doing it. But he knows that when I put the responsibility on him and he might get caught and he might pay the price, that also builds him. That gives him that feeling, okay, they trust me and I'm old enough that I'm going to pay the price.
What's fascinating about this is it doesn't, neither you nor your son would say, and I probably wouldn't either, but it's just interesting that it doesn't go. Ask in the school.
If we ask and they say no, then he can't. We both agree not to ask.
it's interesting. Anyway,
I don't see a reason not to. Right. I can understand that a school.
If it's off school grounds.
It's off school grounds. It's off school times. Let them have a good time.
The only thing they could possibly get to, well, say, well, you know, you said you're a bright kid. You should put your time into learning or something like that. But that's, what are they going
to
say?
Let them talk to me. I'm his parent. Yeah, you know.
Do you think that what Gep said before, though, about, like, you know, false pride that kids get, they mistake sometimes bright kids who are very, whatever is valued, that they can mistake their gifts for their efforts. In other words,
Rabbi Feinstein said that.
You see that some people get stunted in their growth because people treat them like, you know, ridiculous. I mean, maybe in the Shiva world, it's like a great Gemara student. In the secular world, it could be a great athlete, a woman who's incredibly attractive, you know. And they remain children because the world cleans up after them and just lets them grow in this one area. And they end up thinking it's them, but they know deep down it's not. It's a gift. It's a problem.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. Rabbi Feinstein said that there are many geniuses who don't develop because they're such successes initially, because they're geniuses, that they never make it to second base. They're always taking the credit, and things go so easy to really grow in Torah, you can't just be a genius. You have to work hard. But when things go easy because you're a genius, then it's hard to work hard.
Right. And in the secular world, we often don't have to work that hard. If you're a, you know, great athlete or a great mahal suma, you really get stuck because you become an ATM machine for other people. So they have an interest in keeping you. You know, you're very profitable, you're agents, and you're, anyway, this is something to watch out for.